Right now, folks are living outside of City Hall. Some have very... Some have very nice RE tents. Other folks slung blankets over poles and are trying to hold it all together with duct tape. Some are sleeping on cement in sleeping bags or using blankets. Others are taking turns sweeping and picking up the plaza there next to City Hall. These folks in Philadelphia are part of a national movement called Occupy Wall Street. They say they need to do something and speak out about the problems they and our country face. They get together for democratic discussions to decide which issues matter most for their attention and action. One woman said she wants to send a message to all state leaders that she can no longer stand the fact that we spend too much money on prisons and too little on schools. Theodore, who's a 33-year-old African-American man originally from Baltimore, was the president of the student council and studied radiology at his college in Baltimore. Now he's in Philadelphia, and he has a part-time job as a waiter and says he cannot afford to pay the rent and is currently homeless. Theodore says that there are more homeless folks in this country that people want to admit, and that the number is growing because of economic hardships faced by so many. Earl is white, in his late 40s. He worked 27 years as a parts manager at a Chrysler Ford plant until it shut down in May of 2009, and he's been unemployed and looking for work ever since. Downtown, Earl holds a sign which reads, $100 a week feeds a family, $100 a day feeds a congressman. Occupy Wall Street is a movement which I think takes inspiration from Arab Spring. Now, here in the United States, folks definitely have more democratic rights and privileges, but both movements involve folks looking for ways to express concern and make a positive difference. Many folks here say they're out on the street taking risks because they want our country to be true to its potential and best self. And I think many of the folks are out there because they can't find any other avenues personally to be true to themselves, their conscience, and their ideals. Here in the United States, whether protesting or not, many folks feel disoriented or trapped. Some had enough socked away to retire or a good plan for how to get to that point, but the instability of the markets, the downturn of housing values have those plans on hold indefinitely. Other folks are unemployed or underemployed, just can't find the right combination of jobs or just one good job, for heaven's sake, to make ends meet. In a quest to live out their true selves, in this context, some folks benefit from connecting with Occupy Wall Street. Others might find a productive outlet as being a part of the Unitarian Universalist Pennsylvania Legislative Action Network, a new developing group. There are 4,000 UUs in the state of Pennsylvania, and we're trying to focus on ways to make UU values come to life more fully. I'll bet that many of us can identify with Parker Palmer's need for a pilgrimage to boundary waters or somewhere sacred in nature. Because when life brings unforeseen and difficult challenges, those elemental worlds of water, rock, and wood can help guide our souls, which are questing for a life lived with integrity. And sometimes we just can't get the message from inside. So we need that interaction with the holy to help our soul say, yes, this is who you are. This is what you should be doing right now. The huge gap between the rich and the poor, massive environmental degradation, stalled out economy. Due to all that, many folks may also identify with Odysseus from Homer's The Odyssey. Odysseus already fought 10 years in the Trojan War. Now he needs everything he's got left in his tank in order to survive a 10-year journey back home to Ithaca. He misses everything about home. He hurts. He's hungry. On the journey home, he has to stave off the sirens, whose songs often crash ships into rocks. He has to battle Circe, the goddess who wants to be with him, but he's saying, no, I'm a loyally married man. And she's turning all his men into pigs. That's a tough one. Then he has to go on to the dangerous one-eyed Cyclops who makes dirty deals with the gods to punish him. These stories are from an 8th century epic Greek poem, but they speak to our lives today, which too often are faced with deception or lack of fairness. Life hits, it ain't fair. Life ain't fair. That's one of the, if you never learn one thing from Reverend Ken, I hope it's, life is not fair, we have to learn how to respond to it. And just like, because like Odysseus, we can't give up on our journey home, which is also a great metaphor for coming to be your true self, coming home to you. How do we cultivate that and not roll in the mud with the swine? After making many sacrifices and maintaining his integrity, Odysseus does arrive home, spends time with his wife, his son, his father, and his dog. Gets good sleep in his own bed, some home cooking, and then hoping that would be it. Now I can just stay here. I've done 20 years on the road for God and country, and now it's the autumn time of my life. I want to be with my people. But no, he realizes, maybe like the recession hits, maybe like some other circumstances in your life, it's not time to just rest. My conscience, my heart tell me, there's one more journey I have to make. The next journey for him doesn't involve war, but it does involve new challenges. He has to go out and sacrifice three specific things: a wild bull, a breeding boar, and a battering ram. By the way, many say those are actually perfect symbols for immature male energy. Okay, so he's been out, he's been a warrior, he's been a hero. He's led his men, but now life is saying it's time to give up the bull, the boar, and the ram. It's time to be a more mature human being. Those lessons obviously apply for women as well. He gives us all. He says, okay, I'll give it all up. I will give it all up. It's not easy, but I will. Then he can go home. And he says, after that, that little extra coda journey that he took, now I will live happily with my people around me until I sink into the comfortable burden of years, and death will come to me gently from the sea. Well, whether it's literal or figurative, you might wish that you could just chill out at home with your dog, spend more quality time with your dad now. And that's great, but it's also possible that another quest awaits you. And it doesn't have to be a physical one to leave your home or Philly, but it could be you have to go out and do something, and you might have to give up something that is keeping you immature in your spirit. You might know what that is. Odysseus can finally rest at home because he followed what the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh advised many others. At any moment in your life, at any moment in your life, you have a choice that either leads you to your spirit or away from it. So, most of us have an opportunity. What's leading you to your spirit? What's taking you away from it? Your true self. Might not be a pretty thing you have to deal with, but your heart, your conscience, your soul, whatever you call it, might be telling you. Your God might be telling you. But a lot of times we can't just sit back and let the game come to us, because if we do that, we often miss out. We're left unprepared. So, knowing that, I'm going to what Jen read from the reading. Are you on a spiritual quest? And thinking about that, was there a time in your life that you took something on, followed your heart down a road, not knowing where it would lead? Or is there something you would want to take on to discover more about yourself? In our quick fix society, how do you sustain yourself along your journey? So here's the spiritual practice of the month. It's actually contained in your order of service. Don't look at it now. But if this hits you, take it home and engage with this. This month, follow your heart on a quest. Take a day and go out and do something you always wanted to do but didn't think you could. Something you always wanted to do but didn't think you could. Now, what do you need to do to make this happen? Make a plan. Schedule a time. Take the steps to do it. And then after you do, reflect on it. How did you feel? Do you think you're closer to your true inner self? You might take a day just to read poetry. T.S. Eliot says, "Poetry makes us a little more aware of the deeper, unnamed feelings which form the substratum of our being, to which we rarely penetrate, for our lives are mostly a constant evasion of ourselves." Maybe a day with no goals, no to-do list other than reading poetry over and over will help you more clearly remember or reclaim the substratum of your being. Now, and poetry is obviously just one of an infinite number of ways to do this. Parker Palmer calls these third things: engage with the holy ground of nature or poetry. But pick something that you always want to do, but you didn't think you could. You might feel called in a way similar to a woman in Miguel de Unamuno's novel. This woman is looking for a way to honor her deceased father. And she has a lot of ambivalence. She finds a priest and asks him, "What should I do? On the one hand, I feel called to pray for my father that he may rest in peace. On the other hand, she doesn't believe in God." The priest rightly says, "It does not matter. Go ahead and pray." Finding her true self in that moment had nothing to do with meeting a creedal test. It had everything to do with honoring her heart and intentionally engaging in the infinite and the ultimate. She prayed with mystery, and it made a difference. I just met a friend of mine who's turning 80 in 2 months. Her husband went through a brutal 3-year decline and death. His body gave up 2 years before he died, and she took care of him, and then he died. And now she's relieved. He's not suffering anymore. She has a whole new life. She's living for herself, with herself, for the first time in 78 years. She's doing all kinds of service work. She's being true to herself on this coda last journey of life for herself. She's done a lot of other journeys, but this is a final one. And it's glorious. She's happy as all get out. Well, we're inviting you. You'll hear Linda and Lenny are going to give a responsive reading. We want the congregation to be doing this quest through conversations. Who are we as a congregation? And we're having an excellent event to kick it off at the end of the month. Because I'd like us to engage in this together, because you see, whether you're looking to find your true best self as an individual or as a community, we usually don't accomplish much if we do it all living in solitary confinement. Siddhartha was looking, he was on this amazing quest, but he found a friend, a mentor, said, "Everything you need to know, you can figure it out listening to that river." And they sat down together for days on end and watched and listened to the river. And people saw that they were enlightened and radiating happiness, and they came and they asked them for help, and then the Buddha actually came and sat with them. And together, the small group talked openly. This is what we're going to do. Talked openly about their life challenges and the times they felt true peace in their hearts. What are those times when you feel true peace in your heart? Let's share that together. Slowly, Siddhartha started realizing from the river that there's unity in every moment of life. I always thought I was alone. I'm not alone. I'm deeply connected to everything. Adults, children, weeping, crying. And I hear from the river a beautiful music of life. He couldn't have done that just on his own. Imagine what would happen if in our church, if all of us began to sit by trees quietly, listening to our inner teacher. Imagine what would happen in our city if everyone went to City Hall or the parks or the religious communities to share stories, laugh, and beam like beacons of compassion. Imagine how light our souls will feel when we whittle away the illusions of isolation and feel the unity of all people dancing with the music of life. Blessings be. Amen.